Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Like that one of the arguments for God is how complex the human eye is. I thought that it was going to be like that. It's like how complex the human watch is.
The human watch is.
Yes. Nature could never create something as beautiful as the watch without God. Boys here, the internet's number one fake history podcast is here to hopefully grab up and suck up a few of those SEO crumbs left behind by all the Twitch streamers. I am your probably slightly overhyped host, Peter O'Donoghue, and vibrating through the walls and floor with me are...
Sorry, your Princess Ethan is on another planet, because there's like a billion of them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm Mames Jiller, the biggest fan of Hod Towered. Mm-hmm.
So I could not resist this one. Bethesda basically begged us to cover Starfield when they released their official timeline a couple weeks in advance of the game's release a couple of weeks ago. And then they decided to release the biggest game of the year. They were like, we don't really want to compete with the Lore Boys on Wednesday. We're pushing it to Thursday. So hopefully we can give Hod Towered the Lore Boys bump there. So. Normally, of course, I would be doing a request from Patreon. I believe we got some fresh ones that Ethan's going to shout out there. But this time it's something that I'm sure someone would request eventually. So retroactively, we can claim we were like on the ball with this one.
Yeah, we're prescient. We were on the ball and reading the ball, the crystal ball that told us that you were going to request Starfield. we have some new patrons this week. Thanks to Michael Hilligus, Cody Small, and Noah Head. I feel like I went to a... Have I known Cody Smalls at some point in my life? Oh, yeah, I know who Cody Smalls is. It just came back to me. Not this one, though, but thanks to... Now I know.
Ethan having a full conversation over there.
I think Noah Head is also a resub, because I remember doing a No Head joke at some point. But anyways,
I thought about Road Ahead the second time, and it felt familiar. But anyway,
they trick us every time with their unsub and resub. There's no way for us to prevent it. So
welcome back.
Yeah. Welcome back.
So, normally I would ask you guys if you had played the game we're covering and if you like it, but obviously since we haven't, are you interested in Starfield?
Yeah, we just talked about it a bit on the bonus content, which if you want to get access to, you can join our Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. I'm quite excited for it. Obviously, we're all big Bethesda fans, I think it's fair to say. We're big Elder Scrolls fans. We have mixed feelings on Fallout 4, but I think we're generally positive about it these days. And I think you called it right, Pete, that it's going to... Starfield will probably be overhyped. So I won't play it for the first 6 months, I don't think, but I will pick it up eventually, and I'm sure I'll put a good and healthy amount of hours in.
I'm also excited for it. Something I think Bethesda does really well is environmental storytelling. Especially in stuff like Fallout or Skyrim, like when you find a blind guy and he has a book and there's no words in the book, like little gags like that, right? And things are finding people that have things on them and then reading a story about it later and learning why there's that skeleton in the corner. My concern with something like Starfield, which is going to have hundreds of planets as far as I know, is how do you do that like small, detail-oriented environmental storytelling whenever the world or the universe is just so big? And how is Hod Towered going to tell a good main quest story through all of that feels like you're not on rails and that you kind of can explore too? I'm not sure how he's going to do it, but I hope he does it good.
I mean, yeah, I'm excited. This will be the first anything that I learn about Starfield. You know what I mean? Like, I know it's like, oh, there's a bunch of planets. That's like, I know it's sci-fi, it's set in space, and there's a bunch of planets. That is like the extent of everything I know about Starfield. I don't know, like is it cyberpunk in that there's, or is it like Outer Worlds-esque where there's going to be a a bunch of, you know, corporations which kind of control everything. Like, what kind of world is it? I have no idea. And I don't know if that's been released yet or not. I haven't been actively avoiding, like, I haven't been on like an active media blackout, but I don't really look at like gaming news or anything like that.
Yeah.
I am the gaming.
I haven't watched anything either. Like, there's gameplay out. Have you watched the gameplay?
No, I haven't watched anything.
Yeah. I watched one early review that came out that I just wanted to know, like, how's this going to run on my PC? And apparently pretty well, which shocked me based on Bethesda.
But you're the expert. You're going to tell us, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then obviously, like, I'm very curious about the game. I've been openly disappointed with Bethesda for years at this point, but new franchise, no expectations is one of the reasons I kind of minimized my media consumption, because I am a fan of Bethesda, and I guarantee if I had overhyped myself, I would be disappointed. So going in as blind as you can be and having written this episode, I think is good, but it's on Game Pass, so I'll be playing it first out of the three of us, unless Jamie buys it day one when it's out for the regulars.
I will.
But I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing, like, where are they at now? Because, like, the environments, like Jamie said, do look fucking incredible. The art style they've chosen is unbelievable. My main concern is interacting with people. Human interaction in video games has gotten so good since 2013, when whatever Fallout 4 came out, the fact that this game is still populated by what looks like unblinking wax monsters is like, okay, see, maybe I'll spend more time out in space by myself and not with these dolls that haunt me. Like, like they still look a bit odd.
It was 2015 or 2016. Howard. 2015 or 2016. I think 13 was Skyrim, or 12.
2011. 11 was Skyrim.
Okay, yeah, 11. And then, yeah, 15 or 16 was Fallout 4. But anyways.
Overall, down with the clown on Starfield. Obviously, join Patreon, because I'll be talking about it, hope if it's good, for months, right? Like, that's it. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, hopefully we can save you guys some time and spice up your experience with Starfield if you're going to jump into it as well. Or Stanfield, as someone in Discord called it by accident, which fucking killed me. <It's> just... And yeah, so basically Bethesda released an official timeline of the events within the Starfield universe up until the game starts. So all of this is additional flavor. And then obviously, if you listen to this episode and play the game, hopefully you can plug some stuff in as you're exploring and talking to people, and maybe it'll, you know, make things pretty cool. So
I'm very excited for this. I had, not knowing anything going in, just getting this timeline and stuff, like, as a preamble is very exciting. So, like, we can start.
I'm very unexcited, and I always lie, and Jamie always tells the truth, and you have to figure out which one of us is the cuter.
Yeah, this Skyrim puzzle is we both like the game. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Which one of us has tattooed on the bottom of the shaft of their penis a moth, a bear, and a wolf?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I tried to get that done. They got half a moth, and we ran out of canvas. But
one wing.
Yeah.
So we start in the far-ish flung year of 2050, when humanity finally arrives on Mars and is living in space. Now, after playing the game, we'll probably learn, like, when humanity started living permanently in space. But, like, for now, we don't have an exact year. Mm-hmm. The human touchdown on Mars is in 2050. And living permanently, I don't know how much time they need to go by. So for reference, I checked how long the average time spent on the International Space Station is, the ISS now.
It 90 days?
Nope.
No? I just wanted to guess.
60 days.
The average is 6 months.
Six? Okay. Oh, well, so I guess
yeah. Days.
Yeah.
Got to make it worth it if you're going up there.
Yeah, you got to make it worth the gas to transport a human body up there. It's just like, it's way too expensive, because it's like $15,000 a kilogram to ship shit to space or something like that.
You see,
longest time spent in space? What do you think? I mean, I guess 2 years.
I was going to say 18 months. 18 months, yeah, like a year and a half.
Yeah, I was going to say about a year and a half. I'll say a year just to be different. Yeah.
I think Jamie's going to get the closest here, because 437 days. Comes out to 1.2 years.
Okay. Yeah. If you stay up there too long, your heart starts to become more round, I believe.
Yeah.
Because there's no no outside forces pushing it in. So
doesn't pull down the part there. All your muscles will, like, atrophy too. And, like, there's certain ones, like, you can work out in space. Like, all the astronauts, they have, like, ellipticals and like exercise bikes and stuff that they have to exercise on every day, their muscles will atrophy. But it's like Jamie says, there's some muscles which you just like can't exercise in the same way, like your heart, like
without gravity. Yeah,
yeah, that's it. It does beat, but yeah.
Yep, we're still we evolved for the Earth. We're not ready for the field of stars, but
it's hubris.
Got us there. Yeah,
it's hubris to fly. Planes are blasphemy.
We should not be reaching up to touch the face of God.
No, that's his domain.
He placed us here. Exactly. I like to think that there's a guy who went up on the ISS when Starfield was announced and is just getting back now, and his like detox to get comfortable with Earth life is like, okay, well, I'll put an hour, a couple hours into Starfield just to readjust to this. I also love the fact that the timeline starts in 2050 because Todd Howard, in a very cringy like game press event, was on stage talking to Elon Musk, who famously wanted to put men on Mars by 2021. And I like to think that like in a conversation with Elon, like dodging weird questions about white population collapse, he was just like, oh, 2021. Yeah, that was real interesting. I'll put that in there. Yeah. And still was just like, yeah, nobody believes that fucking bullshit. And started his fantastical sci-fi game in 2050.
Yeah. This is the first landing we're talking about in 2050, or is it like
we have first humans on Mars in 2050? Cool. Yeah. Cool. And people are living in space. Like I said, I don't know the time exactly because the average right now is 6 months, but I would say like one full lease in your space apartment is considered permanently living before you get renovicted to Mars or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what this is all speculation here, not even Loreboy's canon. When I was watching parts of the reviews to see how it would probably run on my PC, I heard some of the reviewer talking about a few things. I think the technology that allows for interstellar travel in Starfield is called the gravity drive, because it is one of the parts on your customizable ship you can change out, I believe, and it's a thing that you need to have fuel and shit for. There's like the little micro game. Your settlement is your spaceship now, at least for the early game, opposed to, you know, instead of getting Preston Garvey to tell you he needs tomatoes constantly or whatever, now you just need to get gasoline on some moon somewhere.
Yeah.
What creates flight? It's like the vacuum of air underneath the wings, right? Or something like
it's
that?
Pressure differential. Yeah.
Above the wings. So yeah. Is it like, I guess we could say like the gravity's, it's doing like that. It's making like a gravity vacuum somewhere.
Something like that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You got a big set of balls in the back of the ship that you've got it all stored in, and then it just lets you go.
Right. Some streamer
recently who had a pre-release code had like sleep timers set because she landed in our solar system, and then she was like, I'm going to fly to Pluto. And it took 7 real life hours to get to the fucking JPEG of Pluto they had in the solar system.
Wow, that's cool. You can do it though.
Yeah, cool. I think it's pretty cool. So over the next century, humanity would set their sights a little further into further star systems, and by 2156 they would do the most predictable thing and reach Alpha Centauri. We've mentioned the star system in the past, I think on Killzone, but since it's one of its three stars in the star system, Proxima Centauri is the closest one to our sun. If you're writing, you know, realistic sci-fi, it's absolutely the first place you would go. It would be the least.
Yeah, it's the nearest one, I think by a fair amount, too.
Didn't we look this up, light years? Though?
It's like 4.5 million light years away, but it's still
four light years.
Four point seven. Excuse me. Okay.
Yeah, which is like however many hundreds of millions of miles.
Yeah, right. Football fields, whatever. Mm-hmm. If you guys want to look up, pick up some of the spoiler images I sent, you can see the effect of the gravity drive. It's very 2001 Space Odyssey. It looks cool, and the style of a Starfield spacesuit and this real astronaut picture that I found.
Whenever we look at the Alpha Centauri, the light that we're receiving is Trump was still the president whenever by the time the light got here, you know?
Even their stop is still on Alpha Centauri as well. I can't fucking believe it. they're just getting all the shitty propaganda.
To attempt yet. Even though, oh my God. We've got to warn them.
Okay. So the we're looking at the first picture where you zoom into the first
two.
Exactly. First two. Okay. And then the American flag on the faraway planets, of course.
Exactly.
Good. And like the very regular the art style they're going for, which I'll get into, they call NASA punk, which is pretty cool. They're taking real spaceflight technology we currently have and just kind of sci-fi sexing it up a little bit, but it's like supposed to be a very like utilitarian and practical design for everything. I saw one thing in a gameplay video, same review that I was clicking through, you can go to like a tavern on a space station, right? But beer is in a fucking juice box because obviously like boxes are so space efficient, right? Like there's so much empty space in a 12. Yeah. So your space 12, right?
I like that since the U.S. government's cut a lot of the funding to NASA, they had to revert to punk ways, like showing up to work in like ripped jeans and like band shirts. And
ripped
stuff.
Knee on your space suit. You just get sucked out.
Yeah, drinking their cheap beer out of juice boxes and stuff. Yeah.
I'd love to see like a six pack ring, but it's all squares because it's got a bunch of juice boxes hanging off of it.
Turtle probably wouldn't get stuck in that, right? All the extra area in a square,
or be like one of those Japanese square watermelons. You just have a bunch of square Japanese.
It's turtles. In that movie Armageddon. Whenever they're like, we have to figure out how to fit the circle turtle into the square thing, so you can get oxygen back in it. You remember that?
I don't remember that.
No, I don't remember that.
They were losing oxygen, and that was the metaphor they used, so we could understand at home how the science would work. To get more oxygen, they had to fit a circle through a square. And how are they ever going to do that? Or a square through a circle.
Right. Yeah. That's so fucking funny. I love the behind the scenes of Ben Affleck talking to Michael Bay about, like, why did you teach miners how to be astronauts? Wouldn't it be easier to teach astronauts how to use a drill? You just pointed at the ground. And he's just like, shut the fuck up, Ben, was his answer.
I guess that's a very old movie by now, but I enjoyed it in my childhood. Yeah,
me too. The Aerosmith track is like corny, but great.
Yeah.
Start to finish.
Oh, no.
We watched it at Ben's birthday party. I remember you were there because we played Frogger in the basement later.
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Poor memory for Jamie.
I remember playing Frogger at Ben's place. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Frogger and he had Lego Island too.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Cool.
Lego, he might have had Lego Racers also.
Damn.
Ben's our rich friend with three video games.
And another very NASA-inspired art. You guys can bring up the second picture. You can see at least the social skill tree in the review I watched looks like arm patches that you would get as an army guy or as an astronaut, right? It looks like the thick material that you do in your chevrons. I don't know how they're attached. I don't know if they're like you iron on your astronaut patch or some shit. I have no idea, but...
Very, I mean, the font and the actual drawings themselves are like very pixel art style. I think like the drawings of the like the perks, I guess, that you unlock as you play are very pixel art style, kind of reminiscent of like Curse of the Obra Dinn or like, which is like a more modern one. But to me, it really screams like those like 1970s or I guess like 1980s, 1990s NASA computers, right? With like the green font
text.
On black background. Exactly.
Yes.
I think it's a call back to that, maybe.
Something I find interesting too, like just based on this screenshot, it looks like leveling up your abilities is going to be more like Elder Scrolls and less like Fallout, where you just get level ups and you assign points. This, it looks like there's a challenge. Once you complete the challenge, which is succeed in 3 speech challenges, then you're 10% better at persuading people. So probably by doing things, you get better directly by what you're doing rather than get XP and assign your points like in Fallout.
And I've heard the character build in this is much more restrictive than in Fallout or in Skyrim, so like you do build towards a certain job and do things in certain ways opposed to just being the jack of all trades kind of blob that you end up as in Skyrim. And for some nerd who kind of likes restrictions on stuff like that, the thing I'm most excited to try out in Starfield right now is just the character sheet that is going to force me to do things a certain way.
Are you going to build a driller that becomes an astronaut or an astronaut?
You better fucking believe it. Yeah. Zero int.
Mr. Mole with knives for hands.
Rocket stone, brother.
Oh, I should. Yeah, exactly. I should just make Steve Buscemi from that movie and go crazy. So a lot of the artwork in the game's marketing and in a lot of the trailers evokes this very specific post moon landing 1970s U.S. government stylization. Fonts and other texts share a lot with the NASA Worm logo, which is the red one that would be their
NASA
current one. Is
Worm logo? What are you talking
it's
about?
It's called the Worm, officially.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah, it's the older one.
It's just the way they spell NASA with like wormy letters.
Yeah, exactly. It's called
Worm. I know what you're talking about. People have that T-shirt all the time. Okay.
Yeah. The NASA logo currently has been replaced by like the globe with a check mark in it where it says NASA, right. Or like whatever, I guess it would be the star, the Night Sky Circle, but in the 70s, this was officially called The Worm. Now, listener, if this is your...
It's back. It's back, by the way.
It's a secondary one, yeah.
I looked up NASA Worm logo. It was discontinued, and like NASA.gov top hit on NASA Worm logo is "The Worm is back!" Exclamation point.
There you go.
All right,
not only is it back, they're excited about it.
Yeah,
for the art, you better be drawing Lore Boys, Starfield, and Worm logo.
Yeah. I love
you. So it should be me, you, and Jamie as a worm, worm, each of us forming the NAS, and then Todd Howard as the last A.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's keep making this art more and more hard and intricate as we go.
Oh my god! Yeah. I did write a personal note to myself yesterday while I was writing the script. It just says 1970s NASA style guide no matter what. So I was we're already on the same wavelength for that one.
Okay, good.
Now, if this is your first episode, listener, I will be using the next couple of minutes to kind of go off on a relevant tangent that I think is personally interesting.
It's germane.
I found out that this part of the federal government logo design, so there's going to be a YouTube video linked for the patrons in the episode picks channel, and I'll send it to you guys afterwards. You can watch it after we're done recording. Where I found out that of all presidents, new friend of the show, Richard Milhouse Nixon, was a huge patron of the arts. And
Tricky Dick thought
art was very important to politics. So the YouTube video that I referenced talks about Nixon's friend, very good friend, Leonard Garment, who was a lawyer and a jazz musician. And they worked together. He was just like, oh, you've got to put money into the arts here. In a memo that it was sent to Nixon from Garment, he wrote, "By providing dramatically increased support for cultural activities, you may gain an increased respect from groups that have hitherto not been favorable to this administration." So he was just like, just give free crayons to hippies, Dick.
Yeah, that's like, it.
Yeah, good old Lenny.
Support jazz and you'll get the black vote, right? Like,
yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My jazz friends call me Lenny Clothes, not Leonard Garment.
Leonard Garment. All right, that's going to be the name of my character in Starfield, is Lenny Clothes.
Lenny Clothes.
So what I think is the entire memo to Nixon is available on the NixonFoundation.org. Which, as a primary source that I've gone to recently, has the best opening paragraph when explaining, like, oh, why did Nixon think art was so important? And I got this as the second quote for the episode here, but it's the last one, so bear with me. In 2013, Oscar winner and House of Cards superstar Kevin Spacey shared some favorable words for Richard Nixon while shedding some light on the efforts of the president to extend federal support to the National Endowment of the Arts, which celebrated its 50th anniversary today. And this has remained unchanged since September 29th, 2015. The Nixon Foundation was just like, should we check what's up with Kevin Spacey these days, or should we just leave this quote from him on our website? It's like, just leave it there.
Nah, he's fine. Yeah.
Everyone was playing Fallout 4. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Too distracted. Yeah. So yeah, that's the end of the tangent there, just about like the style guide for Starfield. Like, technically goes back to Richard Nixon somehow, which is just like such an interesting little setup there. And of all the presidents to be like super supportive of the arts, it's odd that it is a Republican one, because the only two presidents who have tried to cut funding to the National Endowments of the Arts were a friend of the show, Ronald Reagan, and of course, Donald Trump. They were just like, no, none of this is important for politics. So I'm glad the Hollywood presidents were the two that specifically were just like, art is not important. It's just like, oh, really?
I mean, in so many ways, like what Richard Nixon did with the Watergate scandal, and we're very tangent right now, I understand. What Richard Nixon did with the Watergate scandal kind of paved the way for Republicans like Reagan to kind of do what they did, where you just like subvert democracy and undermine, you know, elections and all this stuff. But I mean, politics was very different at the time, right? Like there wasn't the internet. There wasn't like this culture of like everyone knew everything all the time.
Yeah.
So you had to be like a very charming, very charismatic person. And like if a bad rumor got started about you, it could really, you know, really hurt your chances. So like you had to be a lot more cautious with stuff that people really care about, which is
from
like,
from the perspective of the next closest galaxy to the Alpha Centauri, Nixon is still president. How long it takes for light to travel.
No, quickly, we need to get a message back to Earth. We need to tell Nixon's goons to get out of the Watergate Hotel. I hope it reaches him in time. So we're going to get into a little bit more about the National Endowment for the Arts and a hell of a lot more into Starfield here just after the break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back, everybody. So while the National Endowment for the Arts was started under Lyndon B. Johnson, the man who replaced JFK for reasons we'll never understand, Nixon was the guy who really got it going. He appointed a woman named Nancy Hanks, who I was guaranteed was Tom Hanks's mom. Like, in my head when I was writing this, just because she's, like, plugged into Hollywood, Tom Hanks, for some fucking reason, is the butt of a ton of conspiracies these days. And I was like, a lot of these people are like, yeah, he's supposed to be, like, the face of the New World Order, because people trust Tom Hanks, I think, is the current thing.
That's why.
But a lot of famous people who get involved, like, their parents have been involved. Like, a lot of people who are involved in the U.S. government are legacy hires. There's not a whole lot of new blood in that organization, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
And Hollywood as well, like Nepo babies and shit.
Sure.
That. Yeah. Tom Hanks has his own too, from his right nut and his left nut.
Very different.
Wait, Tom.
Very much are like the dark and the light in Tom Hanks, right? Like that. It's very much is like the id and the ego, just like come manifest. Yeah. This Chet and Colin Hanks.
Tom Hanks, T-H. Todd Howard, T-H. What's it all mean, man?
My God. Yeah. Oh my God. So Tom Hanks' mother, Lore Boys Cannon, Nancy Hanks, during her 8-year term, managed to get the budget increased from $8 million to $114 million per year.
That's a big
increase. This project as a whole, it's fucking massive, so this project as a whole is the source of all the very cool 1970s U.S. government art and design. And then a lot of that obviously gets transferred into the sci-fi stylings of Starfield, which I guess have avoided the boring NASA period of time and just were like all 70s the whole way here. And also, the other good thing is that since the timeline starts in 2050, that means Richard Nixon's love of the arts and Lenny Close are canon in the game as well.
Sure.
So now we get back to our official game timeline here. Shortly after arriving in the Alpha Centauri system, humanity establishes a new government, calling itself the United Colonies, or UC, which is what I'm going to call it. And a year later, New Atlantis. Damn it.
Got him.
Only took me a minute and a half to get there, but I was like, there's something.
Yeah. I was going like, you see this bad game trailer, you see that. You got to go right for these nuts.
Keep it simple. Yeah, just keep it simple, man.
Yeah, exactly. Keep it simple. Yes. Keep it simple with a C.
Kiss these nuts. So the first city established in 2161 is called New Atlantis. And I love them calling it this because current Atlantis is famous for being stable, still existing, and having good government, right? We're on the frontiers of space. What's a great name? Like, it's like, I can't believe New Titanic got us all the way out of Alpha Centauri, right? It's like, oh, the curse is lifted.
Atlantis, the original Watergate.
this will happened? Be our magnum opus star station. We call it the Fall of the Roman Empire.
So they built New Atlantis in 2161. In 2167, a man named Solomon Coe settled a new territory, he named Cheyenne, with its capital being Aquila City. So, pre-release Pete doesn't know exactly if these settlements are new settlements on planets entirely, or solar systems. I think an entire settlement is like one habitable planet like Earth, but your settlement would be the sole system. Because when the UC sets up a space station called the Clinic, to make sure Cheyenne wasn't getting too free and easy. The outpost they built is specifically called a star station instead of a space station or like a satellite or something like that. So that's just inferring from what I know so far.
I was curious.
Cheyenne itself was a solar
system. I was curious. I didn't look up exactly what you asked, but I looked up how many planets are going to be in Starfield, and says Bethesda Starfield players have an entire galaxy with over 1,000 planets to explore across 100 different star systems, all with their unique weather, species, and characteristics. So this thing is going to be massive. Huge.
That's pretty big.
It's, yeah. It, and part of that you had mentioned earlier on is, like, I'm really concerned, like, how many barren moons am I going to be wandering around on and not encountering anything?
How many
at all,
Jurassic
right?
Park, like they had in No Man's Sky, where it's just like a giraffe with dumbass legs. And
I hope. I haven't heard it yet, but because they always make me laugh. The recorder cover of the Starfield theme, please and thank you. Whenever that's ready,
I haven't heard the Starfield
theme,
but I'm looking forward to it.
Me neither.
Looking forward to the recorder.
Yeah.
I'm gonna love it. So the system of Cheyenne is named after the Native American people who used to live in and around Wyoming, Montana, and Colorado. Mm-hmm. Like, I know First Nations tended to have very flexible borders, but the Wikipedia page does not have a map of where the Cheyenne used to live. There is still Cheyenne, Wyoming, the city, so I'm assuming it's around that area. But anyway, and like, I know they talk about it. The HBO show Deadwood, which I've recommended a million times, they talk about Cheyenne a lot, which is like a close by territory, because Deadwood is set in one of the Dakotas.
Or basically. Dakota. I will say, I looked up the Cheyenne people. They have a great flag. And double feature, their flag looks like a quest marker in a video game. So.
Oh, it does. Yeah, I agree. Awesome. Yeah. I like that.
It's like it's a square in like the diamond position, essentially, with like four lines in the middle of each side of the square. Like,
reminds me of Destiny 2 quest markers for some reason. As, even though I haven't played it in ages, it reminds me.
It's just glad you look at it, you're like, that I'm a gamer. That's a quest, you know what I mean?
That new telescope, I'm forgetting the James Webb telescope.
Yeah,
they found a distant galaxy that looks like a question mark, which looks like a quest.
Oh,
that's great. It's very good, and it's like very clearly a question mark from our point of view. It's very good.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, but back when that question mark was formed, obviously Gerald Ford was still present.
Just like a question mark.
Right?
That's so cool.
I guess everything's big enough, you'll find one eventually, but it's so cool that we have such a clear picture.
That's why there's so many question marks in Texas.
Yeah.
The questions are always big.
Don't
Texas.
Question Texas, but check
in on Texas. Check in on Texas? Don't question.
And then the capital city of Cheyenne now is called Aquila, which is Latin and Arabic and means eagle. So the Old West, like, frontier theme of this new star system settlement is, like, in the whole thing. In 2188, Solomon Coe invited another new colony called Voli to hang out and eventually become the Free Star Collective in 2189. I looked up the etymology of Voli. It's like Latin for volley, which I don't think is right. So I was just like, I definitely am not on track for this one. If somebody wants to try and pull up a better clip, that would be great.
Voli, to want, wish.
So Free Star Collective, we're starting to get like, the UC is going to be the big government. Free Star Collective is going to have their own wants and needs. I'm starting to feel out a little bit. Yeah.
Strangely enough, Jamie, the next sentence is, this is when the UC started to get a little nervous and began setting up the Clinic Star Station, orbiting a different planet called Deepala in the Narian system. Because, it's like, we've already got a big government, guys. You don't need your own rights and everything like that on your own different planets. We can just universally govern one way, right? And the Free Star Collective was just like, spit towards a spittoon, but since there's no gravity, the spittoon's just on the wall.
it's like spinning in zero G's, right? Like,
I always think it'd be like central vac, like it would like fly and then it would just get hit into a suction.
NASA is famous for constructing the zero G spittoon.
Every spittoon in space has like a tiny stable black hole in it, so that like whenever you spit it'll just suck it right in, right?
Richard Nixon's best friends were a jazz musician and then like a frontier miner from the 19th century. So that's why he implemented these two policies.
Yeah, the black hole never grows because of Hawking radiation. Little bits of spit are come out as data. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah. Of chewed tobacco. I'm sure that's what he was talking about. Yeah,
when you spit at a space spittoon, there's a 50-50 chance that the tobacco gets destroyed and you just end up with a gob of left over, or the spit gets destroyed and you end up with some good tobacco that you can chew again.
Oh yeah, it's a tobacco recycling. Yeah, they figured out how to nail the coin flip and it just recycles tobacco at the other end. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. We have to be, you have such limited storage in space. The best thing to do is, because you can only bring up so much dip, because it's $15,000 per gram of dip.
Yeah, and the dip tins aren't circular, they're square.
Little dip juice boxes with a straw.
Yeah. Dip, reuse, dip. That's, I don't know.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I got it. Dip, reuse, dip.
Yep. It's a good system.
So, the people of, speaking of systems, the star system, people of Narion, saw this move as the UC trying to expand its borders. They were right. And in response, they decided to threaten to join the Free Star Collective.
Sure, yeah.
So they were like, look, we're happy to pay space taxes, whatever the government system is up there right now. But, like, it really does seem like you just want to control us, and we're doing everything you already told us. The UC refused to move the clinic, this is what they called the star station, and brought in a fleet of starships to really prove that they weren't trying to aggressively keep tabs on other colonies in the area.
If you don't trust us, we'll show you our army. Here it is. Yeah. They're all just here.
Yeah.
You can see them. You know, you can see they're not doing anything.
This is like a
right
dirt
on your doorstep.
Yeah. It's a dirt farmer happily farming dirt, and they have a gun to his head. It's like, what are you doing, man?
Basically, Hey, look, the UC gets 8% of all the dirt.
Exactly.
To launch back up to the clinic. So obviously, Narion joined the Free Stars because the UC did exactly what they had asked them not to do. And then the Free Stars, the Free Star Collective brought in their own fleet of ships to defend their new colony, beginning the Narion War, right? So much like the, at least I don't know when they would have written this, but it has this really familiar real world taste to it. Much like the war in Afghanistan in our timeline, the Narion War drags on for 20 years, and the public just does not support it or respect anybody involved in it at all anymore. And
I'm fine with the Free Stars, right? Which I guess in this instance is Afghanistan, which is weird to say. But
oh yeah, the brave fighters of the Mujahideen, right?
Not a fan of the Taliban, but I guess I'm fans of the people on the planet that are there. Just like, we just want to fucking farm our dirt in peace.
Exactly. I looked up Narion because I'd seen that as another gamer tag of someone I used to play with. Apparently, John Narion was an English astronomical writer in the 1700s into the 1800s.
Oh, yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. They're definitely doing the Mass Effect thing of having what I think is very realistically ships and places named after real people. Like Hugo Gernsback is in a side quest in Mass Effect 2. And that struck me as a silly name at the time, but I've since learned who he was.
Who's that guy in Oblivion that's like kind of like elfy looking and he has like a funny voice?
All the elves?
No, it's this one character that keeps coming back in Bethesda games. Apparently they've put him in Starfield as well, and I can't remember the name of him because I never played.
Oh, the fan, the adoring fan.
That's right.
Fan.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. By Azura.
There we go.
Yeah. So after the idea that the UC, you know, squashing the dirt farmers wasn't exactly this historic or this heroic project, the Narion Treaty was signed in 2216. So 20 years on the dot, basically. And the universal term for new colonies was agreed upon. Now they call human colonies and their star systems settled systems. That's
okay.
It. There are a few other caveats with the treaty that we'll get into later. But for the moment, people are burnt out on war. They don't like it anymore.
Okay. You said human settlements. Are there aliens at this point? Are there aliens in the game at all?
No. So there is still no alien contact at this point, and I have no idea if there will be in-game. Cool. This is not something I looked up because I don't want to fucking spoil it.
I mean, and as someone who just looked up how many planets and it said all with their own unique weather, species, and characteristics.
No,
it could be goofy giraffes.
Sorry. Could you play you know, a Vulcan or a Romulan or whatever.
Or an elf. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Or a giraffe body with crocodile legs.
Yeah, know. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Can I please, Todd, please?
Honestly, give the modders. Fuck. What? The game's out on Thursday? Sunday morning. Yeah. Thomas the Tank Engine will be in the game.
You'll be and then maybe that giraffe plays with a bug. Crocodile legs.
Yeah, by next week.
And so the crocodiles can reach all those high up fish or whatever crocodiles eat, right?
To grab them. So that was my next thing here is there is no, I mean, alien contact, I did mean specifically civilizations, there is no contact or conflict with alien races at this time. It's just like regular frontier shit. You know, maybe your kid gets eaten by a mountain lion, but you're in space this time. Stuff like
that. Gotta wait for the DLC when they add the Flood and the Covenant or whatever they'll do. Yeah. Oh, God. That seems to be like the same three types of aliens that come up in all these space. Like in Destiny, they do that. It's the Hive and the...
Yeah.
Well, there's a few of them, but the Hive is basically the Flood. And then, yeah, the Covenant are like, maybe not quite...
Yeah, well, there's usually like humanoid alien, robot, parasite alien. Are the three, and I don't know what they're going to get into, if anything, in this. But at this point in the 2200s, in the 23rd century, there is no civilized alien contact yet, and I guess nobody has asked the giant crabs on some moon if they have a culture.
Got it.
So at time of writing, cool. Right. So following the treaty, the Free Star Rangers are formed as a peacekeeping and investigative organization serving the people of the Free Star Collective. So they set up their own spooks, basically their own FBI. And then Constellation is then formed in 2275 by a man named Sebastian Banks. This, I think, is the most important organization to the player, since after whatever gets the plot in motion, you are asked to join Constellation. It's your The Hero Is You organization, basically, at this point.
That's the same thing as The Last of Us, right? Their little... Fireflies. I thought it was Constellation for some reason. Yeah. Okay.
No,
you're getting confused with thousands of nights, thousands of stars in the sky, but they're not 10,000.
Okay.
Oh, right.
Beep, boop, it's a different boop, map. Boop, right. Boop,
boop. Okay, got it.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, of course, and Constellation is based out of Owl City. some new settlement. Right. The home base for Constellation is built and is called the Lodge and is set up in the still existing New Atlantis. And the head of the organization at the time of the game in 2330 is a woman named Sarah Morgan. Not going to get into her because she's an actual character. No spoilers for this one. This stabilizes things out in the starfields for a while until 2308, when the Free Star Collective starts farming land fields on the planet of Vesta. The UC sees this as the Free Stars establishing a new colony, which the Narian Treaty forbid. So they straight up are going after the dirt farmers. And in response to the dirt farmers, the UC lays siege to the planet after the diplomats fail to get anything fucking done, and this starts the colony war. So they really are going to go to war.
A quick thing about the gameplay. Pete told me this in the car yesterday. It was like that id helped with the gunplay in the game, helped polish everything, which are the folks who did the gun stuff at Doom, obviously.
They made Doom.
Yeah. Right, so which guns shoot pretty good and fun in Doom. So hopefully shoot pretty good and fun in Starfield as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen some pretty cool gun models. There's one... I've always found this cool, even in Destiny, which I'm not like a big fan of. The one of the revolvers you can get in Starfield, the whole chamber comes out.
Cool.
So you replace the entire thing for your like space six shooter, and it just looks like a really like satisfying mechanism to screw around.
I always love the six shooters, like the hand cannons that kill in one shot, but you have to be accurate on the head. That's like my favorite guns. So.
Yeah.
And credit where credit's due for Fallout 4, even though the shooting didn't have like the id polish that they're at least marketing. Again, I haven't got my hands on it. Didn't feel perfect, but the gun designs in Fallout 4 are really fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like the gun artists at Bethesda do really good work. And this, you know, very utilitarian, practical sci-fi world with very utilitarian, practical looking guns. Like everything's made of that white NASA plastic.
Yeah.
Right. And that's like a really cool.
Pete has a model of an energy rifle on the wall behind him, just out of frame.
It's behind my fridge right now, which I've moved into the middle of the room once I fix my floor. But I do have that, yes. The UC would kill anyone defending Vesta or anyone new who arrived to try and defend it. I don't know what the UC's play is going to be in the game, but the fact that they are going after people making their own food, I think they might be like early villains before a twist villain, or maybe overall villains, because this is like people feeding themselves is a fucking insane thing to start a war after, war over, right?
Yeah, probably like every Bethesda game, there's going to be positives and negatives. There's going to be some asshole on the FSC that it looks really bad from the outside, and maybe he is, or maybe he has his own reasons, and there'll be reasons to side with everyone.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, they are a fan of the, and it is kind of funny, like they are a fan of the morally gray. But even in Skyrim, when you have like these Daedric princes who are like objectively evil, it's like you never really get these are the objectively good guys, right? Yeah. Like even the gods who seem good are the ones who are apparently good are just completely absent, except for the occasional shrine, which gives you like a buff for the next 20 minutes.
And like, in like Skyrim, you have to side with either Ulfric or the city of Skyrim, or the Empire of Skyrim of everywhere. Yeah. And it's basically like the racists or like the people who are just oppressing everyone. It's like, what do you do? It both sucks, but I'd
love to see the morally gray explanation as to why starting a war with somebody trying to grow their own vegetables is actually the reason to suck.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm open to hearing both sides, man. It's like I'm gonna play whatever Jimmy Pants, the centrist. I go through it, I'll just like, no, I'm gonna hear that actually.
Or maybe this game will be like so detailed and fun you can just ignore the war and go to another star system and have a good time in one of the thousand other planets. And
I mean, it's
let me profit off the food wars.
It's funny because you said like in Skyrim, like you have to choose the Empire or the Stormcloaks. But that's not the main quest, right? Like the main quest is the Greybeards and the Voice and defeating Alduin, the World Eater, right? So that's like, and that is one that I think, like the first time I played it, it like that quest line where you're deciding which faction to side with feels in a lot of ways like the main quest. Mm-hmm. Where it's like there's a lot of attention given to it. There's a ton of missions. There's like the overworld kind of missions where you can like capture forts and things like that, which adds like extra layers to Skyrim, I guess. But feels like it.
If there's factions and faction quest lines in Starfield, I'm sure everybody remembers the Dark Brotherhood more than the main quest, right? Like I'm sure the faction main quest, if they have lengthy quests behind them in Starfield, I'm pretty sure it'll probably be like super, super memorable compared to generally Bethesda's main quest of just like, you know, find some alien bullshit.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, who wants to control it sort of thing, right?
I hope there's not too much of like when you kind of get to the end of Skyrim and you've like completed, like, let's say the Dark Brotherhood quest, then it's like you have like Darkness Begins or something like that, or one of these quests that you basically could just do over and over and over again. And it's like, go kill this one person, come back. Go do this, come back. And it's randomly generated, unfulfilling story-wise, just like kind of busy work. And I hope there's not too much of that with the scale of the universe. Like, I hope things feel like fun to do. And like, maybe they have 100 quests and you can encounter them in different ways on the 1,000 different planets. So that way you're still getting like properly written story. But I hope you don't get to planet 3 and you've exhausted everything because you went too far from the main quest. And it's like,
to kill one guy on some rock out in the middle of nowhere. And that's like the only repeatable content. I don't know.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how they pull it off, because it's definitely going to be a challenge. But
Skyrim had a couple of good types, like assassination, dragon hunts, different other rumors. Like hopefully it's improved since then, because I did do a lot of the dragon hunts in Skyrim.
Okay.
Right? I thought you just like go talk to somebody. It's like, there's a dragon causing trouble. I'm like, honestly, these are always fun. Like, it's always worth, even when they get way too easy.
I can kind of go both ways, which like famously like Fallout 4, what I think they did wrong was the fort building and the building stuff was like a really interesting mechanic that I would have wanted to play around with sometimes. Then the fact that they shoehorned it into the main quest line, so you had to go gather materials and build the stuff, I was like, no, this ruins it now, right? So like, I kind of agree with Pete, where sometimes I will pick up a game like Skyrim and I'll be like, yeah, I just want to go do Dark Brotherhood missions. You know what I mean? Like, I do kind of like that. I want to just like, I want to role play that I am this character and like believe that. And I could so see myself in Starfield being like, yeah, I want to be a bounty hunter. Like, yeah, I just want to go claim some bounties. I want to go like hunt some people. And like, I think that will be the thing that gets me to that, like, that, you know, mostly 90% empty moon orbiting some planet, right? Is like,
right.
I gotta go here for this target, and now I'm here, and it's like, this is a beautiful place. I'm just gonna like poke around a little bit and explore it, and, you know.
I can kind of see it that way too, but I hope there is good written stuff and not just all procedurally generated too.
Absolutely, like it's like David, friend of the show, David bought me Kenshi for my birthday, I guess, a little while ago, which I haven't played yet, but it is very much a like an open world, like it's an open world sandbox RPG. So it's essentially just like, hey, here's this big open world, very fleshed out, a lot of detail to it, but there isn't really a story. You just kind of go through it and role play and make your own story. Which sometimes it, like, that is daunting to me to like take on a whole game of that. I haven't started it yet. It's been on my wish list for a long time, 'cause I do want to try it. But I don't know if I will eventually just be like, oh no, like some days I'm like, oh man, I don't want to like have to think up the story myself as I'm like going through this, you know what I mean? But, sometimes I like it. Sometimes I like the opposite where I'm like, yeah, just give me a thing to just give me a bunch of quests in a row to do. Right.
So it's all speculative, but I'm looking very forward to it. We're almost towards the end of the timeline here and almost ready to just get straight into the game and start going to Barren Moons. The UC would kill anybody, just to recap, the UC would kill anybody defending Vestar or anybody that showed up, and this war would just continue until 2311, where during the Battle of Cheyenne, the Free Stars managed to take down a heavily armored and armed UC battleship with only civilian spaceships. So the war ended there. They were just like, okay, like, we can't do space guerrilla warfare. We're just going to end this war here. However, later on, the UC started the Vanguard, which is their very own civilian navy, which is just like, oh yeah, we've heavily armed our population too, smart guy. It's like the most insane fucking thing to do, right? Also, the government like hiring basically human shields as well, like unenlisted human shields, opposed to like what a regular army would be, right? there are no major wars now between the Battle for Cheyenne or the Battle of Cheyenne in 2311 and when the game starts in 2330. By the looks of it, the next 19 years were quite peaceful and pretty good for humanity. A lot of the major characters, or what I'm understanding to be major characters from the game, start to leave their old lives behind. So there are rangers, there are ex-pirates, there are bounty hunters, politicians. I read about one character who's a theologian who, if written properly... A theologian in space is a really fucking cool idea to me, of like, because we're out there to find God, and I don't know, I'm like just inventing a quest line in my head now, but I'm like, cool that they specifically mentioned this theologian joining Constellation in like the 2029-20s or whatever,
well,
right?
I'll reference Outer Worlds one more time, I guess, this episode, which, I mean, it was written by Obsidian.
Oh, the Vicar.
Yeah, Vicar Max was, I think, one of the more compelling characters, too, where it's like, oh yeah, what is space and what does religion look like in this like hyper future, right?
Yeah. And like the more grounded nature of the technology and a lot of the stuff in Starfield, I'm like, this could just be a regular university professor you recognize today, now in this, now joining Constellation as like the, you know, I think it was called like Watchmaker Theory, is non-creationism, where God just like starts the universe 4 billion years ago at the exact same time. Like, that guy looking for God might be a really compelling idea, or like very good character lore that we'll learn about as
I didn't think your Watchmaker was gonna be where you went with that, but that's cool. I know, like,
yeah, he just winded up the clock and it's like, well, happens, sort
like
of
that. One of the arguments for God is how complex the human eye is. I thought that it was gonna be like that. It's like, how complex the human watch is.
The human watch is.
Yes, nature could never create something as beautiful as the watch without God.
It's like literally made by humans. Like, yeah.
like metal and plastic.
There's a David Attenborough voiceover that's like panning wide shot of a beach as it swoops in. All these little eggs on it hatches. Tiny little watches popping.
Little pocket watches.
Yeah,
got birds. Back
magpies, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
The baby watch takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Put that on a t-shirt.
That is good. I love how, like, when a baby watch hatches, you'd know exactly how old it was, because it would just be on the face. The babies have incubated for 90 days in the wet sand and are now okay. out of these 1,000 planets, I hope there is a watch.
How do they move, though? Maybe they don't have glass on the front, so the second hand like keeps grabbing like, the sand and pulling them forward. Like,
I was, yeah, I was imagining them like clams. You know how like clams swim in SpongeBob, like the little pinchy thing. Okay. I imagine them like hopping down
like
the
pocket watch by like opening.
This is because I've been picturing a pocket watch with like a gold chain and like slithering like a snake with the gold chain going behind.
Wow.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
Depending
okay.
on which of the 1,000 planets you land on in the Lore Boys universe,
yeah, exactly.
yeah. different baby watch. Yeah.
They're gonna be like a, like whatever. It's like I can't believe they rewatched the pocket watch model from the clam planet on the snake planet. They just recycling parts. But yeah, anyway, the after the Battle for Cheyenne, a lot of the lore is just leading up to the game of important people doing important things and joining Constellation. So now, presumably, it is up to you and your barely human-looking character to become the most important person out in the star
I'm
fields.
I'm gonna do it.
But that's
I'm gonna
it.
Be, yep. What was it?
Lenny
Johnny
Clothes.
Pants. Johnny Pants.
Jimmy Pants. Lenny Clothes. Yeah, if you if you're a fan and you want to join us, name yourself
Ricky
funny Headband. Nickname. Yeah. Nickname Garment. There that you put it together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm Lenny Garment pocket watch. And the UC is coming for
in Fallout 4. I've been playing as Texas Red. Who's in the song
okay,
Big
good.
Iron. Big Iron on your hip, yeah.
Yes. yeah, so I've been your speculating host, Peter O'Donnell. You can find me on Instagram at Loreboys Podcast or on the Discord linked below. Big shout out to our new patrons. Thank you very much. Patreon.com/TheLoreBoys. And hopefully, I'm excited to try. Hopefully, I like it. And there's going to be a lot more Starfield in the future. If it jives with the boys, man. But looking up this official timeline from Bethesda's site, I think they got something pretty good here. A lot of dominoes lined up right now. I'm curious to see where they go to, basically. Yep. But fellas, where can we find you and ask you about Starfield?
Well, I'm hoping it's good. If you are new to the show, a lot of our stuff goes on in the Discord. So discord.gg/loreboys, LOREBOYS. If you hop in there, that's where the community's at. That's where you can get access to us. And if you are on Patreon as one of our subs, you get access to even more stuff like the pictures we talked about today, like a place where you can ask questions, where we'll answer you directly, loser titles game, where all the funny jokes will come out ahead of time, where you can guess what we're talking about, and a special chat for all those folks. So Discord's the best way to interact with us, I think, across all of our platforms, and discord.gg/loreboys, is where you'll find me and Ethan.
Best way to make requests as well. If you want us to cover anything, we have a request channel, which is that's where I get basically all my ideas from.
Absolutely.
Point.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you want to help the show, best way to do it is leave us a review or tell your friends about it. We had a great wholesome story from longtime listener, friend of the show, Jester, about them introducing it to one of their friends and their friend having a great time with us calling a character from the Magic Gathering plane of Ixalan, the Dalai Lama, if he threw hands.
I don't remember that.
That was very funny. That was Ethan's line. That was a good one.
I think it was a pre-written joke too, so I was especially proud. So like that just goes to show you this is like that's the only way we can possibly grow the show is with your guys' help. We don't advertise, we don't do anything like that. So really you guys just telling people you think might like it is the best way to do it. If you have somebody you know who's excited for Starfield, if you want to send them this episode, That'd be great. That'd be fantastic.
Because Lord knows it's going to be a long time till the next Todd Howard release where we try and catch SEO,
yeah,
huh?
Exactly.
yeah, exactly.
We need you guys to help us out in the meantime. We have probably
Elder Scrolls 6 when I'm 41 is probably not going to have the same vibe as this episode.
We're pretty old. We're going to be goddamn old when we get there. I'm gonna quickly plug Sea of Stars because they're indie dev, Quebec-based, and they deserve it. It's their second game, so small studio. If you are interested in old turn-based JRPG style, check out Sea of Stars. And if you want to support our show, Pete already mentioned it, but patreon.com/theloreboys. If you don't want to spend the money on Sea of Stars, you can spend your money on us instead, where you get access to the bonus content where I'll talk about Sea of Stars a little bit more.
Yep.
Talk about other video games. Pete gives his review of Blasphemous 2. And don't give it up for free, dude. What the hell? Just trying to sell this shit.
We've got like about 80 episodes up of extra content ranging from like 25 minutes to 45 minutes usually. So usually on the longer side. So if you like this kind of stuff, there's just a whole big pool of it waiting for you just in the next star system. And all you need is $3
to get $3 away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So check it out. And of course, if you don't trust Patreon, we do have Lore Boys Prime, which I forgot. It's been so long since we recorded. I forgot what we had.
We've been covering. It's been tough, man.
Lore Boys Prime, of course. This week, we do have something very, very special. So we've kidnapped Todd Howard, and we are forcing him to make Elder Scrolls because he keeps saying that he actually does very little of the actual programming, but we're not taking that as an excuse. So anybody who sends us money this week for our lawyer fees, which are sure to be coming up soon,
astronomical,
and going to be big for sure. Anybody who sends us that will get access to Elder Scrolls 6 whenever we do, which
so
presumably
far,
will be sooner.
what Hod has been able to put together, it looks a lot like Spore with giraffes with crocodile legs.
Exactly.
With our direction and his coding ability, we'll get there, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we have Hod management experience, including Hod Towered, so we're not creators. We're just the middleman pencil pushers, so we're getting stuff done really fast, I think.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure the middle managers are the most essential parts of any business. So
absolutely.
There's also a donation link where you can donate one meal to a starving Hod Tower.
Exactly.
That'll keep him going.
But then if you send it to him every now and then, we'll steal his sweet roll and we'll go, oh, someone steal your sweet roll.
Spit on it and hand it back to him, which is like, that's probably <Yeah. laughs>
and I think that would constitute a Lore Boys.
Lore Boys. Out.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.